The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Yappa-toy, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. In the studio, we have filmmaker, actress, producer, do you sing, you dance?
A little bit.
Singer and dancer, she does everything, a little bit of everything, Jerry Lennon.
Hello, how are you?
And we have Mr. El Grandito, Hassan Godwin, on the phone.
Sorry, I don't even know what that means, but okay. Yay.
You forgot you were, yeah. You were the wrestler, El Grandito?
I forgot just that fast. Yes. Well, I forgot about my whole career, but I still have the mask.
It was the injuries. It was the injuries.
Yes, all those head injuries.
So on this week's show, we have at the New York Comic Con, we have the Mala Film Press Roundtable with director of the film, oh boy, Trishu Tijavi. And L-Man Jenny Felody interviews author Christian Hurst. Before we do any of that, we're going to take it away with the news.
It's Morphin time!
The news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi.
For your Wi-Fi.
As well as the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comic bookness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way in November the 21st of this year. Tickets are not on sale right now. Also, I want to give out shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, Woodwind Director Jared Perrell, Newsday Famous Resident Media, Shadow Rabbit Art, Yasin Ray, The Huracan, and Millie Portes. You want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. A little button on there takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on the It Came From The Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some human skin abilities. Issue 1 is on sale right now, and Issue 2 is coming out this year.
Yay!
And
yes!
Finally, I want to mention that on Wednesday, February 11th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at the East Middle Public Library, we're going to have our 101st live show with actor and author Dewey, and they'll be giving away a signed copy of their book, and plus we'll be giving away 2 free tickets to the Long Island Convention of Horror, which is a convention about horror in Long Island.
Imagine that.
For more information, go to www.eastmiddle.info. All right, so as we always do, we start off with the sad news. We have 2 bits of sad news, and it's not who you think it is. So first off, we have comic book legend Sal Buscema died recently. As of this recording, no cause of death has been announced. While Sal worked on a plethora of comics, he is perhaps best known for his 8-year run on The Spectacular Spider-Man and his 10-year run on The Incredible Hulk, both for Marvel Comics. Sal is also credited with creating such characters as Chandu the Mystic, Cypher, Lady Deathstrike, Grandmaster, Graviton, Hyperion, Nighthawk, Nomad, Rom the Space Knight, Sabra, Speed Demon, Starhawk, Super Patriot, the Time Variance Authority, the UFOs, Warpath, the Wrecking Crew, and Baron Zemo, just to name a few.
Wow.
Of note, his older brother John Buscema, who also died in 2002, was also a comic book artist. He was 89. I can say that I was aware of his work. I wasn't a huge fan of his work because he was like just before I really got into comics, but he was an amazing talent, and most of the cartoons and animated stuff I grew up on was based on his work. Hassan, are you familiar with Sal's work?
Yes, and I have the same basically the same things to say. He was a little bit before my time, so I wasn't directly into his work or directly influenced by his work, but you can't really get away from his work. You can't get out of the influence, you know. So I was influenced by a lot of the artists who he had influenced. So his shadow is really long, and it's a shame And unfortunately, as all the years that I've been in the industry, I was never able to meet him. So it's a real shame that I'll never get to meet him. But you can't deny, I mean, the breadth of his contributions is undeniable.
Yes. Jerry, should I ask or should we just move on?
No, I was just saying, my sons love Spectacular Spider-Man, like growing up. Like, I know the theme song and all of that, so that would be the closest thing I get. How old was he?
He was 89.
89, okay.
So, moving on for the second and final bit of final bit of sad news. Man, it's cold outside. Actor
yes, it is.
Actor Florio Floyd Vivino also died recently from cancer. Known professionally as Uncle Floyd, he had a character that had his own show, the Uncle Floyd Show, and apparently Hassan knows who he is, which ran from 1974 to 1998. Of note, Floyd unsuccessfully ran for governor of New Jersey as a write-in candidate in 2009 and 2017. And his brother, Jimmy Vivino, is from the Max Weinberg 7 and later the Basic Heel Band for Conan O'Brien's Late Night Talk Show. He was 74. Now, it's weird. I've never heard of Uncle Floyd, and I looked up his work, and it was during when I was around. I guess I didn't see it. Hassan, I'm guessing you have.
I know of him. Again, the same view. Like he used to guest on other. He after the Uncle Floyd run, he used to guest on other shows as Uncle Floyd. So I never saw his actual, like, you know, direct run. It's kind of like Wolfman Jack, where you know him, but I never listened to any of his shows or never saw his direct influence, but he was so influential that I know about him just peripherally.
Right.
And so, you know, and then you know he's a big deal because he's guest starring on this other show, and everybody's cheering, and everyone's talking about, oh, it's Uncle Floyd, and they refer to him, like, really casually as Uncle Floyd. So as a young person, you're like, oh, this guy must be a big deal. And then, you know, he pops up over and over again. He just becomes, you know, you become very used to the person. You become very used to that person's contribution. But you don't really understand the breadth of what you're looking at. So that's what I would say. But I know him well enough to know that that to hear that he's passed away is you know, it has an effect. It affected me.
Wow. Jerry, are you familiar with Uncle
Floyd? No, when you told, I looked him up, and he looks familiar to me, and the fact that he did children's programming with puppetry and everything, I admire that a lot, because I think that's great. But, yeah, again, like he said, he's known, but he had a huge following from, like, David Bowie, and, like, big stars followed him or were guests on his show. But, again, that's me looking it up. I don't remember his show.
So that is it for the sad news. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio. Sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Hi, I'm Olivia Youngers from Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Michael McManus. I played Kai on Lex. You're listening to It Came From the Radio.
BKG Productions, LLC, your ultimate audio transformation partner. Got audio that needs a magic touch? I am here to elevate your content. Specializing in professional audio editing, I can clean up background noise, plosives, and pesky S sounds. From podcasts to songs, I've got you covered. Whether it's an interview, music track, setting volumes to precise specs, email bkgvobiz@gmail.com or go to fiverr.com, search for BK Graves 1, and trust me to make your sound sparkle.
Hello, everyone. This is Ellen Dubin from Lex, and guess what you're listening to? It Came From the Radio. Keep listening.
Comic books for kids. is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
Hello there, this is Jan Chappell, who plays Callie in Blake 7, and I'm checking in to It Came From the Radio.
Cosplayers, exhibitors, and celebrities, oh my! Stand by, Connecticut. Dragon's Realm Comic Con is coming March 21st, 22nd at the Danbury Sports Dome, located at 25 Shelter Rock Lane. It will be Danbury's only premier comic convention. This event is your one-stop shop for everything pop culture, featuring celebrity meet and greets, exhibitors selling the coolest products, various discussion panels, a gaming area, and of course, cosplay contests. Tickets will be sold at the door or get them online via TicketSpice.com. Link for tickets are on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Visit drcomiccon.com for more.
Hello, this is Carrie Hoskins. I play Sonya Blade in Mortal Kombat. You are listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official of the Big Apple Gone. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking along with filmmaker and actress and everything extraordinaire, Jerry Glenn.
Hi.
And Mr. El Grandito, Hassan Godwin, on the phone.
El Grandito. I'm not everything extraordinaire. I'm just El Grandito. Okay.
All right, so we're going to do the regular news from the...
That's a lot of nuts!
...department. From the new sci-fi film Mercy has dethroned Avatar Part 3 from the number one spot in the domestic box office, pulling in a disappointing $10.8 million in ticket sales, beating out the aforementioned Avatar sequel, which came in number two spot, making an additional $6.4 million in its sixth week of release. For those of you keeping track, the aforementioned Avatar is currently the highest grossing film of this year with $378.5 million, followed by Zootopia Part 2 with $401.5 million. Now, because of the movies came out last year, the numbers are slightly askew, and this year Avatar has made $128.1 million and Zootopia raked in $63.6 million. The first 2026 release is at number 3 with... $59.3 million, and that movie is Housemaid, so I haven't even seen that yet. Fun fact, do you guys know what movie took James Cameron's Titanic off its 15-week run at number one?
No.
Hassan, ideas?
It was in 1997?
1998. You're close.
1998.
Come on.
What movie? So Titanic was 15 weeks at number one and something knocked it off. So this was at 5 weeks at number one and got knocked off. This James Cameron.
I don't remember. That was a very crazy time.
I have no idea.
As soon as you say it, I'm going to
It was the sci-fi film Lost in Space, of all things, just knocked it off of this 15-week run. Crazy, right?
Considering what happened with that movie, it's only by dint of the fact that everyone had already seen Titanic that movie came close to knocking it off of anything, because that movie was not well received.
Which is ironic, you know, what movie dethroned the longest running movie of all time was that movie. It's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah.
Well, so, now if you think about it, 16 weeks, that's... You know, like, it's bound to happen. Anything's going to come. Winnie the Pooh could have probably knocked it off by after 16 weeks.
Maybe. So, ready, Ryan? Moving on from the...
That belongs in a museum!
...department. Once again, the Library of Congress has announced their 25 films that are inducted into the National Film Registry. The films are selected based on their, quote, cultural, historical, or aesthetic importance to the national film's heritage. The sum of the 2023 titles include, 2026 titles include, The Tramp and the Dog, which was from 1896. It is a 1-minute silent film, which I watched. It's thought to have been lost, and it was found in the National Library of Norway in 2021. The Oath and the Sword from 1914, which is another silent film. The Maid of Macmillan, which was from 1916, which was the very first student film ever made. White Christmas, High Society, Brooklyn Bridge, which is a documentary. Say Amen, which is Say Amen Somebody, which is another documentary about the gospel music. The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing. The Big Chill, The First Karate Kid, Glory, which is one of, I think, two war movies I've seen in my entire life. Philadelphia, that's the
Tom Hanks.
Before Sunrise, which is a drama. Clueless, The Truman Show.
Wow.
Frida, The Hours, which was a drama. The Incredibles, the animated film. The Wrecking Crew, which was a music documentary. Inception, The Loving Story, and Grand Budapest Hotel. You familiar with any of those, Jerry?
Yeah, The Big Chill.
I've never seen Big Chill. Is that any good?
Yeah. It's like a cult. Yeah, it's really, really good.
Was it really, really good for a significant reason to put it into a Hall of Fame?
Yeah, because you have so many stars in it. Yeah, it's a classic.
It's a culturally significant film.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hassan, you know any of those movies?
I know The Big Chill. I know Philadelphia. Yes. I know a lot of the ones. I know so many of the ones that you just read off that I can't remember the ones you read off. I just remember going, I know that one. So I know a lot of them. And there's a lot of reasons that those movies get chosen. And like I said, some of them are just like cultural landmarks.
Yeah. And so they take the actual film and they put it and they preserve it and they restore it. And that way they keep it safe for future generations. That way when the apocalypse happens, people can go in there and watch all these movies.
Watch what those ancient crazy people who blew themselves up used to watch on a regular basis. So
yes,
I get it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the one you saw, the silent movie one.
The silent movie.
That, you said that was a minute?
It was a minute movie.
And
it's actually on Wikipedia. You can actually go to Wikipedia and watch the movie.
I'd be interested to see that.
The Tramp and the Dog.
Yeah.
So I thought it was The Lady and the Tramp, but no, that's the Disney animated film. But the Tramp and the Dog, it's basically a guy. There's a lady, I think she puts out like a pie or something on the stoop.
And he shares
And the guy tries to steal it, and the dog attacks him. And that's the entire thing.
Wow.
And he's trying to get away from the dog. It's not, you know, it's a static one shot.
Yeah,
well,
going
to the movies used to be really easy back then.
Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't an involved experience like it is now.
Yeah. And remember, it's also a silent film, so you guys kind of had to guess what's going on.
Yeah.
And that was it. It's like,
well, you had to read. You had to know how to read.
That's true, too.
Black and white and
say what?
Yeah. So, moving on. From the, where is it? Ah, I thought the whole point was to not use your phones department. None other than Alamo Drafthouse has announced a new mobile ordering service that will replace the traditional mode of pen and paper at the hands of servers. Starting in February, so today, the system will let their guests browse through the menu, order prior to and during the film, and pay directly from their phones. Apparently, it has a custom-built dark screen system, and Alamo is still going to maintain its, quote, no talking, no texting policy, and will remain in place and will be enforceable by employees. Executives say Alamo Drafthouse's new approach aims to improve efficiency while continuing to protect what makes the brand special, an elevated, immersive, and more distraction-free way to enjoy the movies. We continue to evolve as we must to protect the Alamo movie-going experience as the entertainment landscape shifts around us without ever losing sight of who we are. Putting ordering control directly into our guests' hands allows us to move faster and more efficiently, creating a smoother and more responsible experience without added distraction. This new service model is a custom, smart, and flexible way to strengthen our long-term health, protect our future, and ensure that we can continue serving our guests, supporting our team, and reaffirming the love of cinema for years to come, no matter what's happening around us. Jerry, what do you think, Jerry?
Well, you know, it's kind of, they're backtracking. If you weren't allowed your phone, and now you are. So, you know, it's a distraction if you're going to order something on your phone.
Yeah.
Right?
The
idea of no texting, no talking, no phone, and sit back, relax, enjoy the show is great, but now they're saying you need your phone to order the food, so it's a distraction straight up.
Hassan?
Did you just say guestesses?
Guestesses, yes. That's what he said. I was quoting.
Am I on the show with a guy who says guestesses?
Well, I was quoting what he said, so it wasn't me.
Yeah, okay.
Quote,
right,
unquote.
Yeah, I mean, I've been at the Alamo. Have you ever been at the Alamo Draft House?
No. I have only been there for the exclusive press event when they first opened in Brooklyn.
So it was when it was free.
So there was actually, if you go to our Facebook page, there's actually pictures of it from that day on where they had like the theaters.
Are you in any of those pictures?
No, I am not in any of those pictures.
Wow. It would have been worth it. I don't see how else they can do it. They can upgrade. The problem is everything in the world is on your phone now. You use your phone for everything. In fact, the almost the last thing people use their phones for now is to talk to other people or to make phone calls. Like, you know, like at my job, I use my phone to get snacks out of the vending machines. I use my phone to get the bus to go to the job. I use my phone for everything. So there's no way that if you want to run a modern business, there's no way you can exclude the cell phone. Now, the problem is, like you said, it diminishes the experience of being in a dark room in the theater room with a whole bunch of other people. If everybody in front of you is just going to light up their phones every 5 minutes, either to order something or to text someone while a movie is on, I absolutely understand that, and I admired them for trying to diminish that. But when the movie is on and you decide, hey, I want another beer or whatever, you know, for the Alamo Draft House, you can drink beer. The only way to make sure that people know exactly who wants what they want, and where to bring it to, is if you use your phone. If you can't like write a note and then raise your hand and have an usher come and run and get the note from you so that they could bring you the food, and you can't get up, if you have to get up and go out and order, then it's no better than a regular movie theater. So even though I admire them and I do agree that they've lost one of their main directives, I don't think there's any other way they could do it.
Now, Jerry, you actually mentioned when you went to the comedy show, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I went to see John Mulaney at Westbury, and when I got there, my phone was taken from me and put in a bag. And my son, who had seen him in L.A., said, Mom, your phone is going to be taken. I'm like, what are you talking about? So when I got there, they literally took my phone, put it in a pouch, and locked it. So I had my phone with me, but I had no access. And it was really a weird feeling, because he's right. You use your phone. I didn't even know what time it was. I don't wear a watch. I'm like, what time? But in hindsight, I really enjoyed the show with no distraction. And it just made me much more present. Like, I wasn't looking at my phone. I wasn't trying to take a picture or whatever. But it was a weird, initially, sensation to have my phone in a pouch completely. I had no way of getting it. And then at the end of the show, you had to go to a station for them to unlock your phone and hand it back to you.
So if you're in a movie theater, do you want to go?
Hold on.
Yes.
That's one more thing, and it'll be really quick. I won't get on a big soapbox about it. The cell phones are getting way too expensive for people to be comfortable giving away their entire lives at the door of some establishment. So that could be another reason why they're changing that rule, because their audience capacity might be diminishing for people who don't want to give up their cell phones.
Yeah, it was just a weird feeling to know I had no way of getting to my phone. But the flip side was, I really enjoyed the show.
But if you wanted to get a snack and you want to order or something, you would have to use your phone, at least in the case of the Draft House.
Yes,
so what are your thoughts
about that? Well, again, if you're going to the movies, get your popcorn and your chocolate and your drink before the show. And like a movie is what, an hour, you know.
How are you crazy? There's like 2 to 3 hours now.
Well, whatever.
She's talking crazy, Mark. She's saying show up on time. Like what the heck is that?
Get what you need and just sit back and relax and enjoy the show. There's pros and cons.
I don't know. It's just weird. I mean, as people who know me,
like
not really a tech person.
Yeah, but even for me to sit in a movie theater and have someone bring food to another person beside me, that's a distraction.
Oh, so you don't even want to... Yeah, get out of here. Don't even bring...
Yeah, but if I'm sitting in... Yeah, because they say they have reclining seats, and I don't want a waiter or whoever come and serve. That's another distraction. I mean, what happened to just going into the movie theater with your popcorn and your soda, sitting back and relaxing and enjoying your show without having to...
Whatever happened to that, those days are long.
I know. Old-fashioned.
It's too easy for people. Yeah, people need to complicate things.
Exactly. If it's not broken, don't fix it. But
so,
that was legitness.
Yeah.
All right. So here's a question for you. We got like 2 minutes left. So would you complain to the usher that the server is coming in to disrupt the movie?
No, I mean, if that's their policy, I mean, I'm
like,
not.
Hey,
gonna,
knock
if
it
I'm
off,
there,
here,
knowing
you.
That you know the server, I chose to be there, but. Personally, I would rather just go somewhere where there isn't that service, where I could go in, get my stuff, sit down, and watch my movie.
So we have about a minute left. Hassan, you actually been to the Alamo Draft House, right?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so...
And it's wonderful. It is actually wonderful. It's great. I wouldn't do it every time I go to the movies, but it is...
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
It was a cool experience.
Yeah.
But now with the phone thing, would you still go as much?
I wouldn't mind it. Huh. I wouldn't mind it.
All right, so we're almost out of time.
All
so,
right.
Jerry, you have any final thoughts?
Just everybody stay safe and stay warm.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah, and if you are in the movie theater, enjoy the show.
Hassan, final thought?
Same thought. Stay warm. I don't know what you got to do. Burn wood in the middle of your living room, but stay warm.
Yep.
So that is it for the news segment of this week's show. If you're listening to us on the air, we'll see you next week. For everybody else, stay tuned for more. It came from the radio.
Hey, this is Billy West from Show Business. You're listening to It Came From The Radio. Get out. Get out.
Now, back to our show.
Hi, I'm Mark Tartis, Came From The Radio. I am at the Mala panel.
I'm Trishul Tejasri, the director of Mala. I started my career doing music videos in the Caribbean and moved into a directing school that was focused on acting in London and New York. But I didn't get to apply those skills I learned for a long time, because when I moved to America, I kind of got caught up in the commercial world, and you know, regular videography projects, like I produced a couple of feature films, low budget, so I learned a lot there from producing these short, low budget feature films, but mainly commercials, until I found these guys.
So is this your first horror movie?
First movie. Technically, yeah.
What was it like going from doing commercials and short projects to a feature film?
So like I said, if I did this 10 years ago, it would have been natural for me. But I think with commercials, I learned about efficiency and storytelling. Like that was a big thing for me. 30 seconds, get the story told. And I would edit the commercials as well. So I think that helped my skills coming onto this. And this was a quick production. We didn't get too much prep time because we were limited by the location and some other things which happened. So being able to move quickly on our feet from the commercial world, and it kind of helped.
So you're following up on that, though, because we've been talking about how it was an 11-day, two-week shoot. How long did post-production last for you? Were you the editor also, or are you working like closely with the editor?
Yeah, I worked closely with the editor. I was like, we would edit reels and send back to each other. I did all the VFX. So that took a lot of time. The main thing I did was a set extension. Because it's Florida, which is flat. So I put some mountains and hills in the background. And some fire stuff that just could not be created in real life. So I had to make that. And there's some other elements which I don't want to spoil. So again, like going through my acting school experience and then my commercial experience, where you don't get much time with talent. It's like a half an hour. So I learned quickly how to get something going with actors. I would have loved 1 week of rehearsal. Like it would have been great. But the strength is I already knew Indigo from a previous project, and Indigo was familiar with the cats because they also worked on the previous film. So there was some kind of inbuilt like language going on, and I think because we are NRIs, we're non-residential Indians, I think there's also that hidden, it's like an extra, we kind of know some, you know, there's like some language you kind of work out, what's the word I'm thinking of? Not language, so shorthands that you just know, and it helped.
So what did you learn in terms of given that this is your first production that you'll be able to apply to future productions, and how did you prep yourself in light of the fact that this is the first time you're making a film? Did you look at other people's films, read books, call people up, cry into the phone?
No, so initially I was also going to be the DP. So I had effectively 1 week of prep, and I was mainly prepping my gear. And then, so I didn't, I'll be honest, like, because, like I said, the commercial experience, I've learned how to just move quickly. I wasn't that worried about it. I also helped with the screenwriting, so I was very familiar with the script. And I trusted the crew. The Bobby Marinelli was the AD and producer and Cameron, and I knew they were going to give us a great crew. So much so that in the first scene we shot, the camera operator, I asked him to DP, because I just couldn't do both. It was impossible. And it worked out perfectly. What did I learn from?
Well, you've been here in New York, so you have a great skill environment to learn from.
Yeah. I've shot here a few times, I've worked on projects. I can't say I learned that much. So according to me, the island doesn't exist anywhere. So we didn't want to make it feel like it's, a Pacific island or an Atlantic island. I wanted to make it feel a bit anywhere. Because the idea is it's a dream. The whole thing's I see it as a dream. So dreams don't exist in any one place. So that was the thing. My background is being British and Indian, and now I'm American. I'm just a big sausage of ideas, and I love. Someone asked me my favorite directors. I could be like David Fincher, but then I could also be Dennis Dugan, Adam Sandler films. Like, I'm all over the place.
So, you said you were part of the creation process. You were working with Misha. How much time did you have for the pre-production, and what point did you realize you only had an 11-day shoot schedule?
I think we knew that 11 days before the schedule. It's because of the location. That was, like, the main thing that happened. Because initially we wanted to shoot a bit earlier. So the hurricane came in Florida, and that kind of put us on a back step. And then all of a sudden we found out the location will be available for these 2 weeks, and some actors will be available, and it was like either now or another year.
So when you were putting it together, were you like, okay, this will take about a month or 2 months, and you're like, we have only 11 days?
I think because I was involved in the writing, helping get the screenplay done, in my head I already knew the scenes, like, and I'd seen the location. And a big part of me, though, is like, I like to go to a scene unprepared and find it. Have some loose plan and find it. But I learned the crew didn't like that. They weren't very happy. They need to know what shot's next. But a big part of me is like, I like to improvise a bit. Like, find the scene within the space.
So would you find that would be now your strength, to do something in such a small amount of time?
That was my strength before, but what I did learn is to plan more. I did realize if you're working with a bigger crew, I should have more on paper.
So since he's saying one more question, let's just get you to tell us what you think audiences should take away from this.
So, as far as I know, there isn't an English language horror film starring non-residential Indian people and about tantra. This is, that's what drew me to this project. There isn't another film like this, content-wise. Like, on paper, there is nothing like this. And for people like myself, it's just nice to see other Indian faces just playing regular people, not playing Indian people, per se. And I think for anyone who's not Indian, there's some side of this culture that you can learn, but it's also just a wild ride. It is a... starts off in a place that feels like, I think I know where this is going, and then it goes somewhere else. Like any good horror film.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Olivia Youngers from Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Looking to upgrade your outdoor space? Rare Products NY has you covered. Our universal pergolas are modern, durable aluminum structures designed to withstand the elements while adding style and value. Enjoy all weather protection with adjustable louvers and glass options. Stay cozy in the winter with modernized screens and enclosures. Create a luxury ambiance with built-in LED lighting. And give your home or business a modern look that keeps guests coming back. For your on-site evaluation, call 516-225-8271. Email rareproductsny@gmail.com or visit rareproductsny.com. Rare Products NY. We've got you covered.
Now, back to our show.
You are listening to It Came From the Radio. You know this is Dr. Feldy. We're starting this 4 minutes late because I cut bangs. I could not get my bangs to stay still. If I can give you any one piece of life-changing advice, don't cut bangs. Don't cut bangs. It's not to maybe, ask the father of the woman before you marry them. It's not to take your garbage out. It's not to make your bed. It's just don't cut bangs. Now, here we are with Christian Hearst, he spent a lot of time in the advertising world, and he's a novelist, he's a sci-fi author. I checked his website, and his your pronouns, are they still he, him?
That's right.
Or you haven't changed them?
No, that's right.
All right, I'm just making sure, I want to be respectful. So here we go, Christian Hearst, how are you feeling today? Let's get a little housekeeping out of the way. How are you feeling?
I'm good, you know. We got the holidays behind us, and lots of, you know, I moved this year, so it was a crazy year, but I'm thinking next year's New Year's resolution is just to do less stuff.
Do less stuff. And my, one of mine is to not work with a-holes. And it's proven to be more
That's
difficult.
A good one.
You know, I thought it wouldn't be too difficult, and it's proven to be quite the task. And you said the holidays are behind. Did you not celebrate the New Year? Are you Jewish?
Well, I guess so. But I have a, you know, I've gotten kind of used to the dad thing. I don't really go out on New Year's Eve, so.
Oh, well, respect for the dad staying home and not out willy-nilly while their sons are, you know, baking food or whatnot. All right, so let's get right into it. Enough about me. Now, you spent years in the advertising world before becoming a novelist, specifically sci-fi. Now, how does that background influence how you build worlds, characters, symbols? Does it change the way you think about storytelling?
Yes, one of the best things I think that I gained from that is that I was able to get used to putting my work out there. And so, you know, I'm a creative person, and I've always had different ideas, and I've done, you know, writing and filmmaking, and I made games and comics and all sorts of stuff, you know, throughout my life. But when it came down to it, and I've had this story in my head for a long time, I think I was able to pull the trigger on it because of my creative career and the ability to just sort of get used to the fact that, you know, when millions of people see your work and then forget about it the next day, and that happens a few times, you tend to become less precious about it. You tend to get a thick skin. And so, you know, I think that's part of it, because I was able to write this story the way that I wanted to and not worry so much about how people were going to receive it, if that makes any sense.
Well, you're a father, so you pull the trigger in multiple capacities. Now, Lily Starling, I see Lily Starling is a character you created, and it maybe it's not too serious. You said you have some camp and some jokes, you have some fun. And who is this Lily Starling? Why do you spend so much time thinking about her and writing about her? Are you obsessed? Is this a woman that you might have met along the journeys?
Well, you know, the character has a lot of me in them, actually, and a lot of, you know, I think a little bit of different people, but really, I went back and forth on the gender, if I was going to make it a male or a female protagonist over the years. And I went with a female protagonist for a lot of reasons. One of those reasons being that I like the expectation being people go into it thinking one set of things when it comes to a young woman. And then I like to kind of surprise them with the fact that she's very much a decision maker. She very much owns her mistakes and, you know, is the kind of, I think, hero that you might expect to be classically male, especially in sci-fi. And so it's just kind of fun to subvert that for people, you know. And I do that. I like to pull the rug out from under people, give them a little surprise. And, you know, but I think it does have camp. It does have, I like silliness in my work every now and then. I like to throw in some silly because life is silly. I mean, we can't control what happens to us. And every once in a while, just, you know, life is ridiculous. You have to laugh at it. But the emotional themes in the book are very serious. And, you know, themes of loneliness and themes of identity and themes of connection and that sort of thing.
I'm a big fan of taking responsibility for anything I might have done. You know what? I'm more self-incriminating than anything, because I figure, you know what? If you lay it all on the table and you tell them day one what's going on, you can be the same person on day 300 that you are on day one. There's no surprises. No one's getting the rug metaphorically pulled out from under them, although I do a great rug pulling trick. And sometimes I wear a poncho with holes, which is basically a rug. So anyway, I really like that aspect of the character, taking responsibility. May everyone do that in 2026 and beyond. Now, every creator has that one spark, comic, show, a book, or fandom, and it flipped the switch early on. What was yours? And how did you that seed eventually turn into Lily Starling?
You know, people who know me know that I've long been into Star Trek. I've been influenced by a lot of sci-fi, but probably the youngest, like my earliest exposure was the original Star Trek show because my mom was a fan, and I got into the Tribbles episode with the little furry guys, and that sort of got me hooked on sci-fi in general, and Star Wars was a huge thing in my life too, and many other things, but that got me reading. You know, as I got more into literature and into books, and I would read more and more novels. And actually, Star Trek was kind of the gateway drug there too, because I started reading the novels. Like, I had watched everything that I could, and then I started reading, you know, Star Trek books, and that I branched out into like Ursula Le Guin, and I'm a big fan of the classics too, and like, you know, Victor Hugo and you know, Alexander Dumas and Charles Dickens, things like that. So I think reading has always been so important to me in my life, and but also just art in general.
Now, controversy alert, controversy, everyone. Full disclosure, I've only seen 2 Star Wars. I'm trying to warm up to it. I'm 41 years old. I've been all through dentistry. I quit dentistry. I got into Botox just in my lips right before we got here. And I just can't seem to get into Star Wars. There's nothing sexy. I haven't heard any jokes. And I even went to the last one in 2015. And my favorite part was when I went to the bathroom. I'm really trying to love it. Now, what is it that you like about Star Wars so much? I'm really trying to understand into this.
Yeah, do you mean Star Wars or Star Trek? I'm just making sure.
Star Wars. You know, I'm all about wars and, you know, combat.
Well, I think it's action adventure. It's just a fun ride. And I like, if you talk about campy, I think, you know, George Lucas had the right balance where it was a little silly when it, for the original movie, it was a little silly. And then it kind of has gotten more serious over the years. But the I like the references. Now, this is going to be for film nerds, but like, I like how George Lucas, he built his trilogy, the original one, on references. And if you're a film buff, you'll see them, you know, like The Wizard of Oz or other classic works. And so it's just kind of fun to see like how he took that and moved it into space. And one of the things I like about space opera as a genre is that it could really be set anywhere. You know, I always talk about, I could set these books at the bottom of the ocean, or I could set them, you know, like in a Dr. Seuss book, you know, where they're like living on a flower or something. But because it's not really the setting that's important. Space gets you out of your head so that you don't think about the guy across the street when you're reading it. But it allows you all these fantastical journeys and things that, you know, that kind of are entertaining, but then you can also explore and sneak in like value themes and stuff that, you know, real heavy themes, like real serious stuff that can speak to people as well. So,
you think that Star Wars maybe could be switch the location to a basketball court, maybe?
There you go. I'd love to see that. Let's try that.
Yeah, you give me a challenge. You got lots of baby mamas. You got lots of alimony. Because, you know, these basketball players like to get busy on and off the court. We know that. We can talk to Donald Sterling and his girlfriend. You know, listen, anyone in my house, I make sure I don't say too much because you never know who's recording who. Anyway.
Well, that's one thing about Star Wars. You know, George Lucas famously, when Ron Howard was working on the Solo movie, George Lucas visited the set and he said to him, "Remember, it's for the kids." And I think that's what he had in mind when he made the original, was this is a kids movie that adults might enjoy as well. Where now it's been taken to this extreme level of fandom, but like originally it was really for kids, and so. I don't think it's necessarily meant to be the original trip. Now people are going to hunt me down, but I don't think it was meant to be taken on a much deeper level.
Right. And now, who would you say your audience is? More of the young adult, under 17, over 17? Probably more.
Yeah, I target like 15 to 18 primarily, but, you know, it's.
That's who I target.
Yeah, it's got broad appeal, I would say. I think most of my readers are actually probably in their 20s and 30s, but. I wrote it for young people with a message for young people that, you know, you will get lonely. If you were true to yourself, that's a lonely place to be, because you, mm-hmm. everybody has their expectations for you. Everybody has their idea of who they want you to be. And so if you are true to you, it can be incredibly lonely because you're on the outside looking in. But if you are, if you stick with it, and if you're true to yourself and who you really are inside, that connection will eventually happen, and that loneliness won't last forever. Because I think people, you know, young people do, they get lost in that idea of loneliness and that tunnel vision that, that it's inescapable.
Right? No, I understand that very well. And some things I want to say things all the time, and my patients, my clients, they want more and more in the lips, and I got to tell them no. But, you know, one thing I found, a little trick, is that, let's say you're not on board with someone, and you can't take them seriously, you know, maybe you're not on board with some of the things they do, maybe they're unholy. You can find the funny, you can find the jokes, you can laugh. And that's one thing I do sometimes. I just find things that you can laugh at, because you can laugh at almost anyone. I would even argue you could find jokes with Hitler. And people would say, oh, no, you know, he was a terrible man. I never met the man. You know, I'm not condoning it. But there's always a joke to be made about every situation, and you can find some joy in your life.
I do think there is a commonality, like relating to people as human beings first. And so like that giving people that baseline instead of seeing like differences first. I'm big on that. And it's like, you know, a humanist, it's like you see somebody and we tend to our brains see the differences. But if we can reframe that to see them as people first, I think humor is a great way to do that, because, yeah, people, you know, that's how our sort of baseline communication, right, is breaking the ice with humor, or at least, you know, something light, and then going from there. But and we're not going to agree with or like everybody, and I just want to make that clear, like, you know, but I think that you can at least give somebody the respect of saying you're a person first. Let's, you know, meet there.
You know, one thing I found, I coined the term connected through comedy, or connected by comedy. Because if we can all maybe laugh at me, you know what, that's fine. I'll be a martyr. You want to laugh at me? Fine. If that's going to connect you and 100 of you all think, oh, that's so funny, you know, Dr. Feldy fell down, Dr. Feldy over-injected her lips, which I did, that's fine. If it gives you some joy, you're all connected. You're all laughing at the same thing. And that is a way to get connection in this world. And I, you know, maybe we all should become martyrs and give people something to laugh at. That's one way.
That's the way that I feel about stories. So, like, I think that stories connect us in the same way that humor. I mean, humor can often be a part of a story, but it's like it gives us a way to analyze ourselves without getting too serious, right? Without sitting down and having that conversation, which can be very uncomfortable sometimes. But through fiction, we can explore a whole different worlds and see ourselves in a different, you know, situation, and explore like, I wonder how I could play that out. And then it can help us, you know, in our lives connect to each other.
Now, I'm actually can be a very serious person. Sometimes I've gone days. I don't even laugh. I don't even smile. It's happened. It happens a lot. You know, more money, more problems, you know. So I'm actually big into escapism. I'm not really proud of this, but I love to sit down at the end of the day, maybe a little THC, maybe a little couple trays of food, maybe put on a little TV, maybe a little Hunting Wives. I'm sorry, I tried Star Wars. I cannot escape into Star Wars. I'm in the present, and I want to run away. But Hunting Wives, you know, those girls are pretty sultry ladies. I love escapism. So back to you now. Sci-fi fans argue all the time about whether we use stories to escape the world or to deal with it. And I say escapism is one way to deal with the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. I think it's both, because I think that could be, I would say that the people who do enjoy pure escapism are probably the ones that do not enjoy the books as much. The second one, you can really get wrapped up in the adventure a little more. I think the first one has a lot of feelings, and I think, you know, it's written for young people with big feelings, and you know, sometimes people get a little bogged down in that. It's not their favorite, not their cup of tea. But the second one, if you want like just a rip-roaring adventure, that, you know, that might be more that kind of that's the purple one in the back there, Lily Starling and the Storm Riders. So it's a little bit more of like a classic adventure story, but yes, I think escapism is a wonderful thing. I think we should all do it. I do it. I watch, you know, I'm watching a show right now. It's called Florida Man. Have you seen
that? Oh, do you recommend?
Yeah, oh, definitely. It's kind of a reality show where they find these people in Florida who did outrageous stuff, but then they reenact it with comedians. So, but anyway, that kind of stuff, I absolutely love it. You know, I love comedy. I watch comedy all the time, but I also think, I don't know, I think we could do both.
You know, Florida Man, I think I should make a documentary called Florida Woman, based on Mahi Lemon, an old photographer friend of mine she's got four snakes and three dogs and a wild husband all in one house. And she's like Florida Woman, this woman. She's all doing something unexpected, surprising us. Shout out Mahi Lemon, Goldie Moon, whatever name you go by nowadays. She's got more names than P. Diddy over here. Now, I actually dabbled in commercial work, especially the last few years, and I found it soul-sucking. It was all about the business, all at the bottom line. Hey, I got money, I got paid, but I wouldn't hawk any supplements or any substance I believe in. I was asked to hawk a GLP-1, a semaglutide, and I said, no, I'm sorry. I know eight people I know that have no more gallbladder after taking the semaglutide drug, so I cannot do a commercial for that. I said, no. However, but the love wasn't in it. The love was not in it as an actor, as a producer. I did not enjoy it. So how do you balance the love of your art and the business? Because you have to sell the books too, I believe. You can't just do it for yourself. That's what I'd like to do. I'm trying to do that in 2026. Just me. No business.
Well, see, my background again comes into this because from a young age, I don't know, I was raised with a kind of a hustle work ethic. You know, I came from a pretty poor family, and the idea of work was just always, it was just part of life, and I like to work. And so it came naturally. I was really interested in graphic design and other marketable, you know, things that also used my artistic skills. And so I grew both at the same time. And I sort of growing up, so I grew up in the Mormon church, and that they have a very business-like hierarchy. It's very like, you know, you wear the suit and tie and they have officers in the church and like stuff like that. And so I learned sort of the corporate world from my church, you know, growing up in that environment. And so I am really good at existing in both spaces. Like, I've been in just the craziest, most artistic spaces, and I've been in just the stuffiest, most conservative places. And so it's really given me a good balance. And now that I'm working on my own art with the books, which is just a joy, I also just really enjoy marketing them. And that's just because I'm a nerd for marketing, because I've been doing it for so long and I've gotten good at it. And so, you know, I get other authors all the time reaching out to me like, can you give me some tips, please?
You know, I'm in New York right now, so I've only met maybe a dozen Mormons, not too many in the last week or so, but this is actually kind of my plan going forward. I'd love to just quit the whole medical industry, everything with the HMOs. It's just a disaster. All my patients, these girls with the Botox and the lips, trolling the OnlyFans and the Hinge and trying to get dates and the promiscuity. I'm out. I want to get full into show business, full onto production. So one of my ideas, and no one in New York has really understand it, I'd like to have seven husbands, because the only reason to have a wife or a husband is to get free labor. A wife can cook for you, clean for you. You don't pay them, they're your wife. Husband, I got free audio, that's my husband. I got free video, my husband. I got a writer, it's my husband. I got someone to carry my bags, fill my iced coffee, that's my husband. So what do you think about maybe having seven husbands maybe like in 15 years when I'm 56, excuse me, 56. I think 56 is a perfect time to settle down.
Hey, I think you're the perfect person to pull it off, right?
I actually am trying to do it. So maybe we'll follow up in, you know, 16, 15 years.
You write that book and I will buy it. I'll tell you what.
It won't be my book. It won't be fiction. It'll be my life. So
that's
I like to keep in touch.
Non-fiction.
You seem like a good person. I've been stalking your socials and listening to your interviews, and you seem like a genuine, kind-hearted man that doesn't need to cover up and wear makeup and lipstick. I do. I feel insecure without all this. You know, I have bangs covering my face. You know, I'm not secure yet like you. And I just really love to follow your journey. and to maybe talk to your readers and see how they escape and enjoy themselves. I've become a fan in the last couple of days of stalking you, so I hope we keep in touch. And please let our listeners, our viewers know where to find you, website, social, anything you want to know, your final thoughts.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's been a joy to be here. And I think the easiest way to find me is at Seahurst Publishing on Instagram, or you can go to christianhurst.link and all my links are there. And also lilystarlingbook.com and at Seahurst Publishing on TikTok as well.
Well, thank you very much. That's Charst or Seahurst, but I like Charst. Bring a little church and religion into it. Maybe we need a little bit of that more back in our lives. That's another topic for another day. Hurst, Mr. Hurst, Sir Hurst, thank you so much for being here. I came from the radio. I'm going to throw it back to Mark Torres in the studio. Thank you very much.
Pritipata, if you had any honor, you would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on the Came From the Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of this show,
tough,
go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google It Came From the Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of this station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.